Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I'm going to move on to my next book. I read a book called Canary in the Coal Mines. Okay. This was a murder mystery kind of book. And basically there's a murder, and this chap Fortunato is a private detective, and he has to try to kind of find his way. He doesn't want to be involved in this. This is by Charles Salzberg, by the way. He doesn't want to be involved in this, but he gets hired to look into a missing person. The person turns out to be dead. And then the woman has got a lover, and the husband's dead in the lover's apartment, but it's not the lover. And the lover then hires the detective to help him. And then the mafia are after them, and all this stuff happens. And it's really, really interesting. It's a really, really fun, really, really fun book. Oh, hold on there a second. Hi, PJ.
What's going on?
I think I hear the phone ringing, so bear with me just a moment. Let's see who's on the line.
Okay.
Hey, you're through to Books Boys. You got Dean on the line. Who's calling?
Charles Salzberg.
Hey, Charles. Wow, what a coincidence. We were just talking about your book, Canary in the Coal Mine. So I've got a copy of it here, and I absolutely loved it. So it's great that you've called in. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I was reading this, and this is exactly the kind of book I like, because I'm a big fan of that detective style stuff, crime books and everything. In my teens, I read a lot of crime stuff, you know, John Grisham, Jeffrey Dahmer. In my later uni years, I read a lot of Agatha Christie, and I think I got a shelf of 75 Agatha Christie novels on it. So I love my crime book. So I was very excited about this. And I initially thought, okay, let's check it out. You know, this is something I'm not used to, but this is not your first book. You've read a lot of books. So do you want to tell us how you got into it in the first place?
Sure. But first, let me give you a little sort of bit of trivia. I actually interviewed Jeffrey Dahmer.
Wow.
And Jeffrey Dahmer, here's the little tidbit. Before he even starts to write a book, he has to write an outline. Detailed outline that can be as much as 120 pages or more.
Wow. So the outline is almost a novella in itself.
Right. If I had to do that, and I don't know what I'm writing, I wouldn't write the book, because I would be bored with it by then.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll make this rather quick. I was an English major, which prepares you for absolutely nothing in the world. And I wanted to, like a lot of English majors, I wanted to write the great American novel. And then I got out of school and realized no one was going to actually pay me to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I stumbled into, someone said, oh, you're an English major, you like to read, maybe you should become a magazine editor. So I got a job in the mailroom at New York Magazine. And I learned very quickly, I did not want to be an editor. Because they all looked bored, and they were there all the time. And
yeah.
They didn't get out. But the writers, they would roll in around 10, 10:30. They'd drink coffee. They talk on the phone. They, you know, talk with the editors. They leave at noon around 2, 2:30. You could smell alcohol from the elevator. They were coming back from lunch. And then they did the same thing in the afternoon. And they left at 4. And I thought, that's the job I want.
That's the one you want, yeah.
That's the one I want, the writer for magazines. And so I you know, I'm going to make this really short. I did, you know, sell an article and became a magazine writer, journalist, having no training for it. And then that led to writing book reviews for the New York Times. And then someone asked me to ghostwrite a book with them. And then I did some nonfiction books. But I always wanted to write novels. And so I wrote this novel called Swan's Last Song. And I wrote it, now it's about 30 years ago. And at the time, it was a detective novel, but it was what a friend of mine called an existential detective novel. Mm-hmm. Because in the book, the detective does not solve the crime. The crime turns out to have nothing to do with every clue he's followed throughout the whole book. And so editors and agents said, this the writing is really good, but we can't publish this because fans of detective novels, they want closure.
They want the typical.
And so I was really stubborn. I was probably in my, early 30s, maybe. And I said, well, screw you. I'm going to put it away. And then 25 years later, I started thinking about it. And I went back to it. And I thought, this is pretty good. If I update it, maybe publishing has changed and I can get it published. So I did. And by that time, I had books published. And I went to an editor. And he read it. And he said, I love this book, but not with this ending. So I said, okay, how about if I change the ending? And he said, yes, let me see it. Brilliant. So in 25 years, I learned how to sell out. And that was the first book. And as I was telling you before, it was nominated for a big award called the Seamus Award, which is given out by the private detective something. And I lost and said, I'm going to keep writing these till I win something. And what happened along the way is I fell in love with writing crime novels because everyone likes crime. And I don't do murder mysteries really, but although this one is, it's the first one where the detective has to find the murderer. Mm-hmm. There are very few dead bodies in my books, except this one. So this one was a little different and it was a challenge to me. So that's how I got into writing crime novels.
So this might have been a good one for me to start on. As someone who comes from a Agatha Christie kind of background with a lot of dead bodies, this maybe was the best one to start with then.
Yeah. But even so, people, I have a friend who once said to me, with all your endings of all your books are ambiguous. You're not quite sure of what happened. And I said, yeah, that's purposeful because life is like that. I have one book called Swan Dives In, which is the same character from the first book, where you don't know what the crime is until halfway through the book. And by the end of the book, you're not even sure there was a crime. And so those are the kind of books that I kind of like to read. But this one does have a real conclusion, but still, it's a little bit ambiguous.
Cool. And PJ, you've joined us.
I've joined you guys, yes. I'm in a worse place to be interviewing someone. Sorry, I'm in a kid's summer camp, so I muted myself. I was listening in a bit to what you were saying. Nice meeting you, Charles.
Nice meeting you.
Yes, glad you could join us.
And you're in Italy?
I'm in Italy right now, yes. It's very hot. Have you ever been?
I've never been to Italy, no.
Okay. Well, it's a lovely place. I'm getting...
It's a nice day in New York City, too, where I am.
Oh, lovely. Okay. Lovely.
Well, like for the record, it's an unusually nice day here in Ireland, so...
What? That can't be. So the triangle has been fulfilled. But I like the idea of an... I was listening in a bit of an ambiguous ending, as you were saying, that it's real life.
You're right.
I like that kind of stuff, too, yes. So, I mean, I would enjoy that as well. And if someone gets, I think people are turned off because they want life to be so logical. They want to make sense out of life, but you just can't make sense.
Exactly. Really, that's what detective fiction is the world, you've got the world and it's in order and then suddenly happens and it's thrown into chaos, usually a murder, right? And it's the detective's job to put everything together, to put the world back together and make everything good again. Mm-hmm. But the problem is the world doesn't really work like that. But that's why people like it. It solves a problem and leaves the world in a good place.
What I like about it is that our detective, Fortunato, he doesn't want to fix anything, really. He just wants to get himself out of the situation. He's kind of like, oh my God, I've been put into this situation. I'm going to do the minimum amount to get myself out of it. He doesn't care about what's going on with the dead husband and the lover and all of that and the mafia. He's just like, what's the least amount of work I can put in to divorce myself from this?
Right. It's all about him. And he's not a happy guy. First of all, he suffers from anger management problems.
Yeah.
He's got a real temper. And the other thing is he suffers from insomnia, which doesn't help the anger part. So, I think that you're absolutely right, Dean. Is that that's that's the character I wanted to create.
And I feel that's more of a, it's more of a realistic character, isn't it? I mean, the detectives, I think most of the time they will be wanting to go home and watch the next Seinfeld episode. Right. They don't always
I see a lot of, and you see it in TV shows as well, you know, these kind of cop TV shows, and they're like staying after hours and they really care about the case. And I think, no, this is more realistic. This guy's just like, get me out of this. You know, what, how do I tick a box and say I've done the job? You know, that's more realistic for me.
Right. It's a living to him. It's, you know, yeah, not a good living. So yeah.
And yeah, that's a good, it's not a good living. He doesn't, you know, he's not rolling in money here. He's not charging astronomical fees. Right. He's struggling for work.
Right. He doesn't even have an office. He has a desk in a friend's real estate company.
Yeah. That he might not be able to keep all year round if the firm gets busy.
Right. That's right. If it gets busy, he's out on the street.
Wow.
Putting in the hard graft. I want to ask you about the, so I want to ask you about the other character, Travis, a little bit, because I couldn't figure him out. I couldn't figure out, at times you think he knows a little bit more, but he's not telling Fortunato. But then I couldn't figure out, well, is he being sneaky or devious, or is he just not that bright and he doesn't realize what it's important to tell and isn't connecting the dots? You know, he's not a detective. He wants to go down more artistic routes, you know? So maybe he's just not that bright. You know, what's your take on that? Is it meant to be ambiguous, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you think most people are ambiguous? And you've actually paid me a compliment, because I try to write characters that are real and complicated. And the thing the best way for me, I think, is to look at someone like Travis is, and I don't want to defame an entire industry, but most actors, and that's what he is, you know, a wannabe actor, have narcissism problems.
Let's a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. As my friend Charlie Shulman, who's a playwright, once said to me, he said, don't ever date a woman with a headshot. And so, you know, they are complicated. So I think you've hit all the things. He's not that bright, but he's also, you know, he can be cunning.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a fool, but if you took his IQ test, he wouldn't, you know, he'd be average.
Mm.
But there are a lot of average people running around.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And my favorite, so we don't really meet the husband, obviously, Donald. He's worse for wear when we first see him, let's say. But the wife, Lisa, I love her, because she's got that sort of, she's got a bit of a don't mess with me attitude, but also that entitled rich girl attitude at the same time. And you always know that she's devious. You know, with Travis, I was thinking, well, is he devious or is he just not that smart? With her, I'm thinking she's very smart and very devious, and she knows what she's doing.
Right, and she will get away with whatever she can.
Yeah,
and the two things about her that should tip readers off is she hires him to find her husband dead or alive. So right away she's admitting that he might be dead,
and she doesn't seem very bothered by it either.
No, not at all. She just doesn't want to be blamed for it if he is. And the other thing about, and I'm not really giving anything away because it's not a big plot thing, is she pays him, because he does find her husband. I won't say how, but she pays him with a bad check. So the check bounces. So there's that sense of entitlement, which you mentioned, Dean, that, and that's the tip off, is that sense of, you know, I can do anything I want. I don't have to pay you, you know. So she is. She's much more... You know who she is, and I'm sure that people know people like that. Whereas some of the other characters are much more more difficult to pin down who they are and what they want.
Yeah, you know who she is, but she's also not an out and out villain. You know,
no.
Where the only real villain, I suppose, is the Albanian mob. You know, they're the only ones that are true bad guys.
And what are they bad?
Hmm.
Boy, are they bad.
Oh, yeah, they're very bad. They're very, you know, terrifying everyone. But at the same time, they're also not main characters. So the main right. three characters are really just trying to sort their own lives out. And they just
they're there to propel the plot forward.
Yeah. They're there to propel the plot. And, the main guys are really, Is it fair to say that all three of them are just selfishly motivated? Like, they're just trying to sort their own life and get untangled from this web.
None of them will, you know, there'll be no statues like for Martin Luther King. Or
no.
They're not out for to help humanity, that's for sure. But I think, you know, I hate to be cynical, although I am. Most people are more like that. You know, it's what's in it for me.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, survival, right? Yeah, totally.
And let's ask you the next thing that everybody always, I like to ask every author, but what's next? Like, have you started into the next book, or is it time?
Yes,
for a break?
I've actually finished one that I had a novel. It's actually my favorite one. It's called Second Story Man, and it's about a master burglar who is actually a combination of two real life burglars. One was called the Dinnertime Bandit because he only hit houses during dinner time because A, he knew that the valuables would be there, and B, he knew everyone would be down having dinner, and he would, you know, he was a second story man. He would climb up and steal it.
Come in from
and
the top.
The other guy is called the Silver Thief. He only stole really high end silver. So I created this character who is really about, to me, the book is about America's obsession with winning and being the best,
mm-hmm.
and what can happen when you're like that. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so Francis Hoyt is his name, and two people get together to bring him to justice. One is a former Connecticut state investigator, and the other is a Cuban-American Miami detective, a cop. But anyway, the reason I mention that is that book ended, and I started to think after I wrote Canary, what happens to Hoyt, the burglar, after Second Story Man ends?
Mm.
And so I thought, oh, that's worth a book, just because I want to see what he's like. He's not a likable character at all.
Right.
And so the book that's coming out in April is called Man on the Run. And it's I don't like to call it a sequel. It's kind of a continuation of Second Story Man. And the one I'm working on now is a character who has a touch of ESP.
Okay. And a little bit of social commentary by the sounds of things as well, which is good.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's we like a bit of that, don't we, PJ? So the final question that we ask on every interview, is if there was any book, any existing book that you wish you had been the person to write, what would it have been?
Easy, Lolita.
Oh, right. Now, PJ, you've read Lolita, haven't you?
No, I haven't read that actually. But no.
Highly recommend.
But I've not read it. Like the whole time.
It's a
why would you recommend one?
Because the writing is so incredible and the wit. And the whole idea of it, you'll see when you read it, and I highly recommend it. And this was written by a guy whose native language was Russian. Probably his second language was French. Okay. And English was probably his third language. His use of language, puns, and allusions is so incredible. You can read that book 10 times and get something new out of it. So if I could have written, and there are other books that I would have liked to have written by favorite authors, but that's the one that's the most intricate and at the same time, the most accessible.
Okay. I've not read it, but many people have recommended it over the years, you know.
And I believe Nabokov translated it's his own book back into Russian because he thought he could only get the essence of it in his native tongue. That's what I read, at least. So.
Fascinating guy.
It's in my never-ending queue of books that I need to get to one day.
Right, he wrote a book because he taught at Cornell, and he wrote a book called Pinin, P-N-I-N, which is about a college professor that's very much like Nabokov was.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got about a minute or so left here, so why don't you give us a plug? Where's your website or Amazon, or where can people go to get the book?
Oh, okay, you can get all my books on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And my website, which I did not do, but a friend did, CharlesSalzberg.com, is really fun because you go there and Swan, one of my characters, has a desk, and it's interactive. And we also did three or four short videos of Henry Swan from the books. And my friend Ross Clavin did the Henry Swan voice. So it doesn't cost anything. Wow. You don't have to buy a book, but I suggest you go to the site.
Play around on the site. See, you're just showing off now. Our website looks like it came out of the 90s. We are...
Again, I have nothing to do with it. I have a really quick website story to tell you. Can I do it really quick?
Sure.
Okay. So I was invited down to Australia, never been there before, for the International Crime and Justice Festival. And I was the guest of honor. And I went on a radio show down there. And I'm coming back from the show on the trolley, the tram, and I'm with the guy who sponsored me. And I look at my email, and there's an email for me from someone I don't know. And I open it up, and it's from a woman. She says, "Hi, I just heard you on the radio show, and I thought you were great. And then I went to your website." This was a different website. "And I think it's ugly. It's really ugly."
No.
And I showed the email to Simon, and he started to laugh, and he said, "That's Australians. Yeah, you know, they're really nice, but they're really direct, and they will tell you what they think." So just to fit, you know, I went to her website, Dean, and boy, that was really ugly. No wonder she didn't like it.
So, ugly in a different way, right? Just
But anyway, I take no credit for my website, but it's really fun to go to because she did a great job. Mm.
Well, that's awesome. Thank you so much for calling into the show. We had a great time chatting to you, and I absolutely love the book. So I'm going to keep an eye out and try and maybe get one or two more when I have the chance.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Okay, awesome. Thank you. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.
Well, there we go. Charles Salzberg calling in unexpectedly. Seems to happen to us a lot. Guys, go get his books. Check out his website.
Nice.
So I'm going to mention real quick some of the stuff that you can get on our Patreon here, because it is relevant. I read it this month. I read four plays by Federico Garcia Lorca. Two of them, you can hear the full reviews on Playboys Extra, and that's La Casa de Bernarda Alba and The Blood Wedding, and Bodas de Sangre. So if you want my thoughts on those, go check those out. But I also read Yerma about a girl who's a barren. But her husband keeps telling her it's okay, like it's not that worried about having kids, but she can't, you know, the societal pressures won't let her accept that, you know. And also Doña Rosita, the spinster, she falls in love with, I think it's her cousin, but basically he goes away and says, "Don't worry, I'll come back for you in a few years once I've earned some money." And then, you know, the letters stop coming, and then all of a sudden he sends a letter and says, "Oh yeah, I married someone else like years ago." So and that's sad.
These are all Federico Garcia Lorca plays. I also like, because I also read them, and they're classic Spanish plays. And it was reflections on the Civil War in Spain. So give it a try. Yeah.
It's a sad little society, though. Like, it's very, you know, because one thing I never understand is he's writing around the same time as Agatha Christie in, you know, he's writing about Poirot. But this is a very different world. Like, it's a lot more rural. It's a lot more, I don't want to say backwards, but it seems less developed than, say, Poirot's world, you know? And it's the same time period, you know? But it's a lot more rustic.
It's a very conservative time in Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally.
But they're very good. I love the poems and I love the plays. So Lorca, top notch. And I have a bookmark that says, "Me vuelves Lorca," and I love it.
Nice.
So, and also, I just did a Playboys Extra on Ramón del Valle Inclán, Luces de Bohemia. So, Lights of Bohemia.
Also a good play that I enjoyed, yeah.
Yeah, a Galician author, which was nice for me to experience, because I have an affinity for Galicia. And go ahead.
He's one of the main modernist writers from Galicia. I'm saying that Ramón Valle Inclán is one of the main modernist authors from Galicia at the time. After all, it was a huge beer, it's a la Tolstoy, and it's a great book about Max Treia, a blind person.
A blind Joycean poet, play. Yeah.
I love it.
It's a little bit picaresque as well, you know, it's this blind poet going around the town, getting involved in different misadventures. It's a fun one.
If you like Ulysses, guys, if you like Ulysses, the night scenes, especially the play setting scene, you will love this. Mm-hmm. You will get that if you like Ulysses. So, and yet at the same time, a lot more readable. So, it's a great play.
Also,
they actually celebrate Ulysses de Bohemia once a year in Spain. where people go out and act like Max Estrella's and like Bohemians.
I did not know that. Wow.
So it's actually an event. Yeah.
Do you know when?
So Spain has got its own Bloomsday, but what's that?
Do you know the date or the month even?
When is it?
Yeah. Oh, I've caught you off guard. You weren't prepared for that.
Well, yes, I'm afraid not. I can't remember. I think the change of date is what's a bit even more confusing. But it's the equivalent of Bloomsday, literally, when I heard about it, because that's all they do. They just walk around nights and I think they smoke cigars and act like Max Estrella's and the people he meets. Great play. Really inspired by Ulysses. So I recommend that to you, Dean, as well.
Okay, we've been there.
You keep putting that off, that book. I don't know why. I love that book.
So the next book I read, there's history has been made, because for the first time since we started this show, I did not finish a book. This is Mario Vargas Llosa, La Guerra del
Fin. And something more unusual happened today was very.
I was also late today for the first time. Yeah.
This is I usually am the one late. So I don't know what's happening to the universe. Angels intervening.
Yeah. This book. So the La Guerra del Fin del Mundo, right? So the war of the end of the world, I guess. I mean, this is, it's not that long. Like, it's 450 pages, although, again, very, very small text and very little dialogue with it being a Latin American book. It's a very slow pace. And, you know, reading in Spanish I can do, but the book has to be interesting. So when you take a book in a foreign language, you couple it with very little dialogue and just lots of endless description and slow pacing, and then you make it about war, my least favorite thing to read about or to watch about. I just couldn't do it, man. Like, I made it more than halfway, about three-fifths. Couldn't.
I feel like history is repeating itself. You're loving a Wilkie Collins novel, and you're criticizing a Latin American novel once again. And I am the one who loves Latin American literature. I even prefer it to mainland Spanish literature, I have to be honest. So it's interesting that we have sometimes these different views, and you readers, just like I think comic is a literary art. You know, you have your other opinions. It's good, I think, that we have this still clashes.
Yeah, you think comics are literary art, and I know that they're not. So.
And let's mention it. The War of the End of the World is written by Mario Vargas Llosa, the Peruvian writer who won the Nobel Prize in, I think, 2010, and almost became, I don't know if you know this name, but he almost became, I believe, either prime minister or president of Peru. Did you know that?
Well, why not? I didn't know. Wow. Okay.
He got Fujimori, Alberto Fujimori became the president instead. It was very kind of sad, because Mario Vargas Llosa was the progressive one. Fujimori, of Japanese descent, was actually really the really conservative one, and started kind of thinking to call it the Yellow Party. And it was not a good time for Peru. And this is interesting. I just want you to know this, because when you read Mario Vargas Llosa, he comments about that time as an author. But nevertheless, he almost actually managed to become the president of the whole country. So that's a pretty big feat. You know?
So
I love his first novel. So tell me about this one now.
No, I don't know anything about it, man. It was so boring. It was taking me like half an hour to read one page. And then at the end of the page, I wouldn't even remember what had happened. Like, I was so bored. I just could. I mean, it's about Brazil, essentially. It's set in Brazil. And they talk about it's the army, and Brazil is going to become a republic. And the only bit I remember is one of the guys issues a proclamation that they have to be civilized and none of the army are allowed to violate the women and this kind of stuff. Then it just goes on and on with nothing happening. And like, I couldn't do it. Like, I have no idea what this book's about. It was the worst thing I've read in months, man.
What? You're criticizing my dear friend. Again, I'm a big fan of Yossa. However, I will say this to you, Dean. I had tried to read you know, my grammar mixed up now. I tried to read one modern Llosa book a few years ago, and I couldn't do it. So I'm wondering if his style did change. I do love his first novel, La Ciudad y los Perros.
Yeah, the famous.
It's the first books was episode, people, if you want to listen back. But it is, to be honest, very little dialogue, extremely experimental. You do need to be attentive, I would say, is the word for his book, just to even know who's talking is the way he writes. You don't not even clear who's talking.
Yeah.
But I highly enjoyed it, nevertheless. And Latin American literature does use little dialogues, unless you're Luis Sepúlveda, maybe. There are a few exceptions, but most of them love
to be
experimental
honest,
literature.
Once we got to the halfway mark, it started to use a bit more dialogue, but it was too late. Like, it was just... I mean, to be fair, I also don't like war books. Like, when I read War of the Worlds, even, I got bored. I don't... And it's not... Where's the romance, you know?
Oh, no.
It's not what Wilkie Collins is talking about, you know? So it's just not for me.
No.
So it gets a no out of 5.
Oh, no. Well, what? Okay. Well, anyway, so I love Yosemite. I can't say for this book. I'm sorry that once again you've been disappointed by Latin American literature.
I'm done with it. But
and you still haven't read. But you still haven't read. Quintessential novel, which is 100 Years of Solitude, which Yossa himself, Yossa was so impressed by that he wrote a whole book. No, you have to get it. Yossa wrote a whole book just about the 100 Years of Solitude. He actually wrote a whole nonfiction
because
book
we really need that, right? We really need that.
He also wrote a complete, a big nonfiction book just about Madame Bovary, the novel by Flaubert. He was a huge fan of that. He thinks that's the first
with no dialogue, right?
Novel. I find myself shocked.
We have two coincidences which I'm going to mention just because you mentioned Madame Bovary. Okay, so that's the first coincidence. The next book I read was a Flaubert book, Gustave Flaubert.
Oh, there you go.
Salambo. And here's the second coincidence, right? I'm thinking this is going to be like Madame Bovary. It's not.
Yeah.
It's more like Guerra del Fin del Mundo. This is another war book.
Oh, no.
I was so sad.
Oh, no, I'm very sorry, Dean.
I can't believe it. And again, I read it in Spanish. And okay, there's more dialogue, so it was easier. It was also a shorter book. And I finished it. But it was also boring. More stuff about war. It's set in Carthage, though. So the ancient history ties interested me, you know, during the First World War.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah, that's what you study, say philosophy and ancient history, just so your listeners say.
So I studied mostly Greek and a bit of Roman, but this is not what I expected from Flaubert, you know, and this was sent over in the care package from Valerie the Pigeon Detective. It's been on my shelf for over a year, and I finally read it. And this is... Like, here's what happens. Salambo is this girl. She's the daughter of, like, a kind of a leader in the community. And there's this guy, Matho and Spenio, and they're both... Essentially, they were slaves, but they're now commanding army legions somehow. But basically, Matho loves her to the point of distraction. It's a lot of, I want you, I need you, I'll die without you, really obsessive stuff. And they go in and they steal the Zimph, which is this... it's like a tunic or a fleece. It's almost like Jason the Argonauts here. They're stealing the golden fleece kind of things. They steal this kind of fleece or this cloak or something. Yeah. And it's the... it's important to the people, right? So then Salambo was asked to go and get it back. And I'm giving you the first half really, really bored me with a war. There's a lot of battle scenes, you know, but then it picked up in the second half and I started to enjoy it more.
His name is Cilandro.
So the girl's name is Salambo. And the guys are Spenio
and
Matho.
Cilantro as
no. Yeah. But essentially, there's also
I thought you said Cilantro as in Korean.
No. There's some sad bits where, you know, for example, they eventually get this girl in the tent, and the high priest says to her, "You got to get the fleece back, so give up your body if you need to, but off you go and pretend you like it." And then she goes in and she has to seduce the guy who actually is in love with her, and that's very easy to do, obviously. And then it's kind of sad, like what that leads to for her. And then when her community get her back, they say, "Well, thanks for the fleece, but you've shamed us, basically. So we're ashamed of you." Oh, and then her dad says, "Oh, but you did get the fleece back. So I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll give you to this other man. And now you've got to go with him and be his wife." So she kind of gets used by multiple men. And that's kind of sad. And I don't like to see that, you know. But this book, apparently Flaubert wrote this because the reaction to Madame Bovary was so critical. Like, so this is, you know, it's an immoral book. That he thought, well, what's safe? I'll go with the ancients. I don't think this is very safe.
Right, okay, interesting.
But look, it was vaguely interesting, but I mean, like, I'm not going to recommend it. If you're going to read Flaubert, you're going to read something better, right? You're going to read Madame Bovary or Sentimental Education or something, you know?
I mean, it's not famous. Madame Bovary is the famous one, yeah. And yeah, you loved that one, didn't you?
I did, yeah. This is not. Sentimental Education I loved, but this is not, you know, anything.
Yes.
But it's fine. It was fine. It was okay. Right, okay. You know, it was okay. But that's me done with all my books. Have you got any more, PJ?
Well, I want to mention, yes, one book I read. This one is a very readable book. And I just sadly, disappointedly, this is not on purpose, although I know I do this often, but it's a book that hasn't been translated into English. I keep recommending books that haven't been translated into English. So, but I generally thought it was because it's a Japanese book that I bought in Spanish almost exactly a year ago. It's by an ophthalmologist, so someone who cures eyes, someone who has eyesight, optician, called Rui Hiramatsu. And it's called Mejora tu vista en 3 minutos. Improve your eyesight in 3 minutes. Gimnasia visual para tener una vista de águila. So I recommend the book Improve Your Eyesight in 3 minutes by Rui Hiramatsu. Given an exercise every day that takes about 3 minutes, although you could extend it up to maybe 15 or 20 minutes. And you improve your eyesight in 4 weeks with simple exercises. The most common one being patches, basically, that you look at and you have to decipher. So there are perhaps 10 to 100 different patches on a page, and only them would be ideal, and you have to look for them. It's blurry. The point is that you're improving your eyesight because it's blurry and because you have to recognize the fine features. Also, different eyesight activities include, for example, reading a page, reading the printing backwards from behind through the page. So it's all doing exercises where you're retesting your eyesight because it's difficult to read. And so I'm going to mention this again next month. Go see how it goes from there.
Okay,
so,
well, there we go. Let's continue. Short and sweet. That's all the books that we've read this month. And again, to anyone listening, I'm going to do my best with several hours worth of editing to turn this into a coherent show. But we are having technical difficulties this month with traveling around and things. So we've done our best, but hopefully it's not too noticeable on the final recording. But we'll be back to normal next month anyway. We're going to finish with our recommendations, and then we're going to play a song. PJ, we're going to use your latest song, The Swan. Yeah. So I very much like that with yourself and your guitar.
This one.
So we'll play that. But first, our recommendations. Would you like to go first, right, or shall I?
You go first.
Okay. So my recommendation is not one book specifically, but it's actually Agatha Christie, and it's The Tommy and Tuppence, because nobody remembers these people. Everybody remembers Poirot and Miss Marple, and if you're really into it, you might know Mrs. Oliver. But no, these are Tommy and Tuppence. They only appear in 5 books over a 50-year period. So there's like 2 in the 20s, 1 in the 40s, 1 in the 60s, 1 in the 70s.
Right.
And this is just a couple, and they're detectives together. But they had some history helping out with some stuff in the war. But the way they behave together is so fun and nice, but also funny. And they've just got this great relationship with each other, and it's very enjoyable to read. I read Partners in Crime, and I read N or M, and one of the others is called By the Pricking of My Thumbs. There's 5 altogether, and they're just very fun. So if you like your Agatha Christie's, you like your crime stuff, but maybe you haven't heard of these guys, I recommend checking them out.
What I recommend is there are so many books I recommend, but I really recommend, if you want to get into philosophy in an accessible and very enjoyable way,
Complete Works of Plato, right?
Well, indeed, yes. I do agree. I like Dean did one summer. He did it for a whole summer. Read the Complete Works of Plato. Or just enjoy yourself with Thus Spake Zarathustra. Also sprach Zarathustra from Friedrich Nietzsche. By far, my favorite philosophy book. And in fact, what is so enjoyable about the book is it is a novel. And though most people might not classify it as, but I would say it's a novel.
Hold on, PJ. I don't know if you've implied that I wasn't having fun with Plato, but you've also tied back because
I did not imply that
Zarathustra appears, of course, in Luthes de Bohemia, so it's a very good tie-in. professional.
Oh, right. Yeah, I forgot about that. Very good. Well, nothing on his play, though, but I just find Zarathustra going into his cave to reflect and depression entering, and he talks about priests being black spiders and there are dances happening and they live like the gods. And, you know, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening. It reads like a magic realist novel, although it's clearly also a philosophy book, because each chapter is a distinguishable critical lesson about society, extremely critical. But in Nietzsche, philosophy is called nihilism and also vitalism sometimes, meaning that loving life. So again, you've got sometimes nothing, there is no God, and sometimes, yeah, but we're going to make new gods, new values, and live life. So it's this optimism, pessimism mixture the whole time. I think it's a profoundly good book, and I did meditate on it when I read it back in Berlin years ago, going to forest and just reading it slowly and then thinking about Nietzsche and what he has to say.
Okay, I've never read Nietzsche, to be honest, so that's something on the...
I think you'd enjoy it. Very readable, because philosophy is great, but it's often just very dry, isn't it, to read? And
yeah.
This is a very... He is a poet as well.
Are you sure it's dry? You don't want to just sit down with like a copy of David Hume and read about Necessary Connections and, you know, for...
That's what everyone should do. I think that's what everyone wants to do in their honeymoon, Dean. Except if they're not... They don't want to make love. They just want to read David Hume. And,
you know, this is funny, right? Years ago, I used to...
insipid couple. David Hume famously said, throw the trash books into the fire.
Dude, I've got two books from the same set. I've got Descartes' Meditations on First Philosophy, which I read. That's grand. And I've got David Hume, A Treatise on Human Nature. I only ever got halfway. It's so very boring. But I used to leave it sitting out when guests would arrive. I would just sit on the coffee table, David Hume, A Treatise Concerning Human Nature or something. It's like, well, look, guys, you know, I've been, been just reading my David Hume again, you know. Oh, goodness.
Oh, yeah, okay. Just for the image kind of.
Yeah, that's it.
So I think we, did you just add a book that you don't recommend it? I think you just added also a book that you don't recommend.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Oh, Lord, mercy.
So, guys, booksboys.com is the website. You can get links to all their other projects. Don't forget, check out all our stuff on Patreon. You can get us on Instagram and all the rest of that good stuff. And if you want to get in touch with us, booksboys@hotmail.com is where you can get in touch if you don't want to use the social media. But that is us done. Hopefully this show hasn't been too long. We'll see when I edit it. But that's everything. And we're going to play PJ's song, Ooh. The Swan. And so if the DJ could spin that record,
nice.
And we'll be back
yo.
In about a month.
See ya.
myself a miss. I've got to kiss and always miss. I said nothing's amiss. I got myself a miss. I said life is bliss. I said nothing's amiss. Cause I got myself a miss that I've got to kiss and always miss. I said nothing's amiss. Cause I got myself a miss. Kiss is all bliss. I said nothing's amiss, cause I've got myself a miss that I've got to kiss, and all is bliss. I said nothing's amiss, cause I've got myself a miss that I've got to kiss. Life is bliss. I am a swan and I used to be a man, but now I'm a swan and it's sure fun to be a swan.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
Italian Shakespeare Crickets.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys, get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows. And you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends. And come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books! I just record this for the blooper.
I'm just saying, like, someday it will be like, yeah, this episode was Dean doing surgery on a monkey. Why I have to do a handstand on a shark.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.